You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to episode Stanislav Nezcash of the Cosmo Pointcast. I'm your host, Trevor Shackles. So, this is the first episode since the season began, and it hasn't been great, to say the least. And joining me to talk about the 32nd place Ottawa Senators is host of the Future Sickos podcast, Brennan Detzler. Brennan, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me on today, Trevor. I want to say excited to break down everything that's been going on this year, but I don't know. It's been a bit of a tough one to swallow. So I don't even know where you plan on starting to dissect this, but I'm excited to be here for the ride.
Certainly, yeah. There's a lot to talk about. I appreciate you coming on. I had Derek Lee on last time, and you guys have been doing excellent work on the podcast. So it's great to have you. I was just talking to you earlier about. I feel like this is perfect timing for the podcast. So. Lots to talk about. I didn't expect we'd have to talk about this, but obviously the most recent piece of news is that Matt Murray was placed on waivers yesterday, or on Saturday, I guess I should say. How did we get here? And just what are your overall thoughts on Murray's tenure in Ottawa?
Honestly, I was shocked. I was super surprised that they placed him on waivers, and not because of the fact that he has been extremely underperforming, because I think it's really difficult to argue against that, but just because of what that signing meant and how much optimism there was regarding that signing, and honestly, probably a bit of pride, because they went out, they got a guy who was directly responsible, in my opinion, for winning a Stanley Cup for Pittsburgh, and. I had another ring as well associated with that, brought him in, really kind of what was supposed to be a major, major staple, I think, on this team. So just the fact that he gets placed on waivers in that kind of statement, I personally thought was shocking. I mean, at the same time, I think it's justifiable. And I think that as fans, we can be split about it, but at least it kind of shows that people are being held accountable regardless of who they are, regardless of what right. They have on the resume, and it probably needed to happen. So I guess, but at the end of the day, I was still surprised.
For sure. I mean, you make a big commitment to a guy like that, sign for 4 years, $6.25 million, especially for a Eugene Melnyk owned team. That's quite expensive, right? And it's just crazy to think that he's only played 33 games in Ottawa. And, they're essentially giving up on him at that point. But like you're saying, I mean, he has an .892 save percentage in Ottawa. And, he's been the worst goalie in the league, I would say, over the past, season and a little bit here. And, even in Pittsburgh the year before, he was only at .899 in 39 games. So, this is three seasons in a row now that he's been awful. And it's just, it doesn't really make sense, because he was so good for those playoff runs, and we saw it firsthand in 2017. He just he stole the series from Ottawa, essentially. And I guess the silver lining, like you were saying, is that people are being held accountable, and we'll get into the off-ice personnel a bit later on, but I don't know, where do you think this is gonna go? So obviously a couple hours ago news came out that he cleared waivers, so I mean, do you think he's ever gonna called up and sort of take over that starting role again? Or, do you think he's just going to be a buyout candidate in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing with Matt Murray is just consistency, and not even just consistency in his play, but consistency in staying healthy. It's one of those things where it's like, it seems like whatever happens, if he gets going, even if he starts playing well, he all of a sudden he tweaks something, and it seems to happen so consistently. So yeah, I mean, I don't know how he's gonna respond being sent to the AHL. I think that's like an interesting kind of development. It's not very often that you see someone who's won two Stanley Cups as young as they are get sent to the AHL and report and play. But if he does go through and cooperate with it, I think kind of the expectation would be that he's going to dominate the AHL, and I would be very surprised if he didn't. And then maybe, yeah, like pull him up and see if they can give him another run at it. Honestly, like, I think the biggest thing at this point is even if they're moving on from him, and maybe that's it. Maybe it is kind of just going to be a buyout at the end of the season, but you got to at least try to raise his value a bit. Like, there has to be a Buffalo or like even an Edmonton, if like some salary was kind of retained, that like, if he can like at least look solid and take some bit of form that he had previously, like he, like that could be a decent asset that you could flip for at least something. So hopefully like he can finally, like he can at least find a bit of consistency and pull him up. And I mean, it doesn't seem like at this point, he's definitely not in the plan long-term, but at least kind of get something back for that asset. Hopefully is my hope or opinion on it, I guess.
For sure. And someone was pointing this out on Twitter yesterday in that, you know, they invested a lot of assets into this guy. You know, they gave up the second and Johnny Gruden. They gave him that massive 4-year deal. And it just sucks that after, you know, literally it was, what, 13 months ago that they did this. So like 13 months later, you know, they're just sort of giving up on him. But what I find interesting too is that, you know, they essentially chose Anton Forsberg over him. And obviously like the contract has a lot to do with that too, but you know, Forsberg's been worse than Murray. So I do find that kind of interesting. And then even with Philip Gustafson as well, like he's clearly been their best goalie so far. What sort of message do you think that sends to him? Like, do you think they're trusting him as their number one now?
Oh, for sure. I think that's exactly the message, is that this is Gustafson's team. Like it's his bus and everyone can hop on it. And I mean, I genuinely like I think that's essentially what they're coming out and saying. I think that he's earned it. I thought that even last year he looked so strong that it was kind of odd to see him start in the AHL. And I mean, I guess like Forsberg is a decent stopgap, especially with the injuries that they've had, but. No, I definitely think that it's his team, and that's kind of the message moving forward. I think losing Joey Tack definitely hurts right now, because if we had those two, maybe the situation would look a little bit brighter right away. I mean, there's definitely some great guys in the pipeline and that aren't too far off as well. But I think the message is definitely that it's his team, and maybe it's a message to the rest of the team as well. Like, maybe it's look like with how bad we've been playing defensively, like this is kind of what things got resorted to. And I know that like that's also something that I find kind of interesting on this topic, is that like goalies are typically always the last person you should blame. Like if you're a team, if you're like on that team, regardless of it, like the last position that you're ever meant to pick apart is goalie. So for them to come out and say like, hey, you are the problem, we're putting you on waivers, is kind of a bold statement, especially with the D that's in front of them. But I do not think that Gus plays another game in the AHL. And I think it's kind of just been solidified at this point.
Yeah, I'd be kind of shocked if he does get sent down at any point. And to your point about the defense, the defense has been an issue for years now. So I do think, you know, if he was still on a really good team like Pittsburgh or whoever, you know, he probably has a bit better result. But at the end of the day, I mean, you still can't make that as an excuse. So, yeah, it's quite surprising. And I mean, for certain owners, especially a budget conscious one like Huge, you know, that could potentially be like a fireable offense in terms of, you know, giving out that contract and then, you know, essentially saying that they're going to buy him out a year later. So speaking of that, you know, obviously Ottawa's off to this horrendous start. They're 4-14-1. And I think when you say it like this, it just really summarizes how insanely bad of a start this is. They're on pace for 39 points. 39 points in a full season. And I know DJ Smith and Pierre Dorion just received contract extensions literally 2 months ago, but how safe do you think their jobs are?
Well, first of all, I think the thing that blows my mind about that stat, or just the fact that they're so low in the standings, is the fact that they are below Arizona. And, yeah. And Arizona is a team that came out this year, and it's essentially clear that they're tanking. Like, they've gotten rid of, like, any decent player. They have some guy who is their starting goaltender that I can't even pronounce the guy's name. He's, like, hadn't played in an NHL game
Vemelka, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Wedgwood now, and then, but yeah, so anyways, but they, yeah, so it's an atrocious start. And yeah, and I think, like, it's definitely kind of comes down to time for us to start having this conversation and what jobs are safe and regardless of the extensions. And, you know, I would go ahead and say that I think that Pierre Dorion's job is more safe than DJ Smith's job at this point. I think that's kind of just a rule of thumb typically is that you often see coaches get fired before mm-hmm. the general manager does. I don't know if it's like a matter of saving face. And, you know, for me, like I actually really like DJ, and I know that a lot of the players clearly really like DJ. Like, he seems like a super upbeat guy. He seems like, in theory, he seems like the perfect NHL coach. Like, you want a guy who's played the game, who connects with the players, who gets them to work hard. Like, really, like, if you look at those fundamentals, like, that is what you want in an NHL coach. But he hasn't been able to make it work. And like, last mm-hmm. year, he kind of got these guys to buy into the system, and it was working. And I think that there was, like, a lot of promise. And maybe they were overperforming a bit at the end of the year. But then this year, he comes in, he makes some really questionable decisions after seeing how good Brännström and other defensemen were, in my opinion, at least at the end of last year. And then kind of icing these vets time in and time out when they should not be receiving the amount of ice time that they have. Like, I don't know, like you just have to question, like, okay, how does that fundamentals kind of translate? Like, how does what he's preaching actually work out to, like, on a day-to-day, and can he execute it? And I mean, like, as a person, I really like DJ Smith, and I think that the team really likes DJ Smith, and I think that they do respond well to him because he's a player's coach. And he does kind of have that, like, okay, like, we're going through a wall together, but it's clearly not working. So it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, well, do you keep a guy just because you like a guy, or do you mm-hmm. keep him just because, like, his idea is there? So yeah, it's an interesting kind of thing. I think that they might, I can't see them firing him now. I think that if it happens, it maybe 40 games into the year, likely at the end of the season. Like, I think that they at least kind of give him a chance to right this ship a bit. It's been a weird year. I know, like, the injuries that we talk about are, like, losing Colin White isn't really, like, in our opinion, that crazy. But there has been a bit of adversity. So maybe just kind of see, like, if he's able to somehow get this young team out of this slump. But man, yeah, I would say that his job is the most at risk. As for Pierre Dorion, I mean, I have a bit of an odd, like, or, like, a bit of a different kind of viewpoint on Pierre Dorion. And in that sense, it's that I actually have a tremendous amount of respect for him because of the fact that I think he has one of the most difficult jobs in the NHL. Like, to try to manage a team in this market where there's not a whole lot of money to go around. There's kind of a history of players not really necessarily wanting to play here. And really making a lot of maneuvers with what seems like one hand tied behind his back. Like, I don't think that it's an easy position to be in. So at least for myself, like, I always, I think I'm, like, more forgiving or more patient with him because, kind of looking at what the team is and what the team has and, like, oh, you know, like, well, why can't they go out and acquire that number one center? Why can't they go out and acquire everything else? Is that, like, there's a lot of moving parts surrounding the organization and his role. And you have to wonder if there's a lot of moves that he might want to make that he's just not able to. So I think for me that's kind of in my spot of, like, yeah, like this season, like, we just saw Mark Bergevin get fired 20 games after going to a Stanley Cup final, and Montreal's ahead of Ottawa in the standings. Like, yeah, maybe it is a fireable offense, but for me, I without seeing the full picture there, I always have a really difficult time in kind of calling for that. And I mean, yeah, there's some serious gaps, like the pro scouting, like this is like the guys that they've identified, the guys that they've brought in, like, yeah, I don't really get it. But at the same time, I thought that that's what Pierre Maguire was here for. I thought that they brought Pierre Maguire in to help with that pro scouting side of things, because it's not something that Pierre Dorion is strong with. And I almost wonder, okay, like, what has Maguire done since he's come on board? Because if it's bringing in Michael Delzotto, like, I don't know if that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree fully with a lot of your points there, especially with DJ. Like, I'm totally fine with him for now. I think it is good to have a coach that players really like. And it seems like, you know, the most important player, Brady, it seems like he really likes him. And it seems like there are some good vibes there. At the same time, though, like, at some point, as you're saying, at some point you need to see those results, right? And I am curious to see, like for example, I believe Troy Mann's contract expires at the end of the season. And if they essentially have to choose between one of those two, I think I'd rather have Mann, just because he's developed so many of these guys that are coming into the lineup now. And he has that solid track record, not even just in Ottawa, but in Hershey as well. So, I mean, if the team isn't improving by the end of the season, I feel like I'd rather have Mann. But, you know, it's not as if DJ has been awful. Like, we've seen some bad coaches in here, but, you know, he's certainly not our biggest problem. And then as for Dorion, like, you're right with the owner thing. I mean, I would love to see just a massive documentary about, you know, the ins and outs of the organization, because the amount of things that could have happened or, you know, did happen because of Melnick, I would love to know, because there must be an extensive list of things. And yeah, it's tough, especially with a, you know, a small scouting staff, not many people he has to work with. But then, yeah, you look at, you know, I really liked the Evgeny Dadonov signing at the time, but that didn't work out. Murray signing didn't work out. You know, trading a step second for a step on obviously didn't work out. You know, there's just so many of these moves that it seems like he's trying to make the team better, but failing miserably at it. And, you know, they have these good young players, but it's frustrating that they haven't been able to add to that at all. You know, like, just adding a second line winger or a second pairing defenseman, which, you know, they said that they were going to add a center and a top four D, which maybe they thought Delzotto was that second pairing D, which he clearly is not. And then, you know, they add, I guess, Sanford and Ennis, if you want to, you know, call those, you know, they're like fine depth additions, I guess. But yeah, it's, for me personally, I just don't think he is the right person for the job long term. I think similar to DJ, I think, like, you owe it to him, you know, to see a bit more this season, to see what the team can do. But I just don't have much faith that next offseason and this offseason after that, he can take them to that next step where, I mean, they're not even a playoff team yet, but even beyond a playoff team, like, being a contender, it's just, it seems like they have so many steps to go before they actually reach that stage. And I don't know. I personally, I just feel like they need a massive overhaul in the front office. Not to mention, I mean, I don't want to write off prospects after they've just been drafted, but man, the 2021 draft class is not off to a good start. Certainly not going to give up on them at all, but no one's really talking about it, and it does not look good so far.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
No, yeah, I mean, like, it's a really interesting thing, and that's something for me. Like, personally, I love prospects. It's something that, like, I have a bit of a background in, but it's kind of always been, like, what I've gotten excited about is drafts and younger players. And it's hard because it's like, well, now I'm looking at this upcoming draft and I'm like, well, maybe at least we'll have kind of a top pick. And then it's like, but are we going to take the guy who I would be excited about with a top pick? Because, yeah, I mean, like, I think that Ottawa had kind of like this really strong theory based on, like, developmental curves and like abilities to like work hard and picking those kind of sandpaper type guys or like in honestly, like even like the Ridley Greggs, like who look extremely promising and playing a game that really fits kind of with the Sens identity. But I think that this year was a little bit, maybe they were just like a little too confident in their theory and like in their thesis and in the way that they operated and kind of with that sense, and it blew up in their face. So hopefully they can kind of use it. Like if it is the same team that's going to draft again, hopefully they can kind of look at this and say, okay, maybe we need to find more of a fine line instead of going that far over, because it's not looking great. And with that being said as well, something that you brought up, just kind of like maybe if Pierre Dorion isn't the right guy, and we're looking at it and we're like, you know, we kind of owe him the courtesy. And one thing that I used to say or used to really feel like was that we almost like, I really wanted to see Dorion resign, and I was happy that he resigned. And the reason was because when a team goes through a rebuild like this, like anytime a team goes through a rebuild, like Buffalo, for instance, who seems like it's been going through whenever there's a shift in like a general manager or anything, they always kind of want to leave their own impression on the team. So they want to have their own guys. They kind of want to go through things, and they have like their own vision long term. So I felt like with Dorion signing a contract extension, at least he had the opportunity to see that through, and we could kind of see the big picture of what Dorion was looking at. And I think that a lot of fans kind of were under the impression, for very obvious reasons, like kind of because it was told to us, that this would be the year that the Sens would start spending. And this would be the year that they would bring in guys. And I just want to know what happened and if like an expectation changed. Maybe it was internally. Maybe they just looked and said, you know what? The team isn't there yet. Maybe we just need one more year of waiting. And then next year we'll spend that money. Because if next year... And that's kind of what is communicated to fans, is that like next year that happens and all of a sudden we do sign a bunch of big players in free agency and we have like another top five pick to kind of go in with it. We have a Jake Sanderson who's probably going to be a top four D-man when he comes into the NHL. Like, that's okay. But it's like, as fans, we've gotten to a point where we just like have really lost a lot of trust in what's going to be delivered, because we kind of just hear, it seems like, what we want to hear. And we're just waiting for something that feels like it's never going to come.
Oh, exactly. And I think what's important to note, too, is that, you know, yes, Shabbat is signed for the next seven seasons. Kachuk is as well. Batherson for the next six. It seems like a long time, right? But, you know, if this season is a lost cause, you know, next season, who knows if they're even sniffing the playoffs. Maybe they're making it close. And then maybe the season after that, they make it. But none of those seasons are going to be Stanley Cup contending seasons. So then all of a sudden you only have like a few seasons left with those kind of guys signed under contract. So I feel like, you know, it seems like you have so much time to get these guys developed and stuff, but a lot of times these contracts, they, you know, they sneak up on you, and all of a sudden like they're a year or two away from free agency and you're thinking, hey, we got to capitalize on this window. So the sooner they can actually add players from the outside, the better, because I don't know. I felt like all of a sudden, you know, the same thing happened with Carlson. Like, it seemed like he was going to be a Senator forever. And then all of a sudden it was, oh, he's probably going to be traded. And then he was gone. So, I just feel like there needs to be a bit of urgency in terms of making this team an actual contender.
Well, and the other side of that as well is, if you look at teams that do extremely well and like how team, like the best way to kind of structure a cap is to have star players or very, very good players on entry-level deals. And now is when we have like Tim Stützle on his like second year entry-level deal. We'll have one more year of that. Next year, we'll have Jake Sanderson probably in his second year, because he's going to end up burning a year when he signs this year. So we'll have him for 2 years. So really, like, this and next year are the years where that kind of spending should be happening, because that's when you're going to be able to really kind of build the strongest team that you can. Because I mean, Tim Stützle is gonna all of a sudden probably be like an $8 million a year player, around that range, give or take $1.5 million on either side probably. So why not kind of try to optimize that? And that's what a lot of teams do, and a lot of teams that are successful. I mean, Tampa Bay, like that they had Cirelli signed to like low money, and that's kind of what you have to do to be competitive. is really kind of utilize that and really try to kind of force it and make it happen. And I think that for me, that's the one thing that I kind of scratch my head at is I'm like, you know, right now you have a lot of guys who are making pretty decent money. Like Josh Norris is still on his ELC. So it really seems like it now would have been a great time to kind of make a push, but maybe they just didn't feel that they're there yet. Like, who knows what was going on behind the scenes, but yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to see. It's tough to see as fans who have been impatient. And I know like a lot of fans definitely have gone ahead and said, you know what, like clean slate. We have like a lot of new prospects coming in. Like the team looks really great. Like you're kind of promising like this mm-hmm. new run of unparalleled success. Like we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's see what happens. Yeah. And not saying that like it's not coming, but at this point, it's tough to see the full picture, and whether that's just being like through more communication of like explaining like if that picture shifted at all, maybe that's one way of looking at it. But right now, like I mean, it's a little disheartening to see as fans.
For sure, and I think all the fans want to see is progression, right? I mean, we were picking 10th in last year's draft. You know, if we were picking 14th or 15th, I'd be totally fine with that, right? You know, it's all about making those steps. And, you know, it seems like we're taking a step backward this season. So one thing I am curious on your thoughts about, because it seems like, now I don't think Dorion will get fired, certainly not soon, maybe the end of the season if they like actually finish dead last. But it seems like a possibility of his replacement would be Pierre Maguire, which people talked about in the offseason too. How would you feel about that?
So Pierre Maguire is an interesting one for me. When the Sens announced that they hired him, I was a huge advocate for saying, okay, like, let's be patient. Let's see what this guy can do within a hockey organization. I know he might come off a little odd in his interviews and getting a little close to whoever it is that they might be talking to. But I was like, let's give this guy a chance and let's see what he can do. And quite honestly, like, I don't know if he's done anything or what he's been responsible for, because there's been a lack of really notable moves by the Sens. And I think like he played a role in the Delzato signing, which I don't know what I think of. I don't think extremely highly of it. So for me, like, I think that kind of him potentially getting moved into that GM role, like it does worry me. It scares me. I don't know what exactly he's capable of kind of going in. I know that there's definitely some question marks regarding his view on analytics, and for myself and kind of the way that things are going, I feel that that is something that a general manager should definitely be accounting for in a lot of regards moving forward, kind of not as a sole tool, but as something that can kind of add to other evaluations. So
right.
I think I don't know. I would definitely be a bit disheartened at this point. I don't think that he's really done anything that jumps out the page. I guess I would still kind of give him a chance to prove me wrong, because at the end of the day, like, we can't really discount him just based on what he's done and what he's said. I think like kind of working in a broadcasting role, like it's completely different. And I mean, I guess there is a reason why he got hired and why they felt that he was a good fit. But I really hope that that is not what we go into. I prefer Dorion in that role 10 days out of the week. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting, too, that like I thought he would be a lot more visible in the media because it, you know, it seemed like he was I can't remember the exact wording they used for his role, but I don't know. It just made it seem like he was going to be talking more to people, and I haven't heard anything from him. But yeah, definitely agree there, where it seems like his views are maybe a bit dated. Again, I would give him the chance, but I would be extremely worried, because I just know there would be some move or two where it's just a massive head scratch and you're like, what, you know, you're trading like I don't know, Artem Zub for some like third line grinder or something. I don't know. But anyway, I don't really want to think about that. I mean, hopefully if Dorion is gone, they do an extensive search and all that. But even Dorion being gone, I think earliest that happens is the end of the season. And even that, like, I don't think Melnick is too keen on paying for multiple staff members when he doesn't necessarily have to. So we'll see about that. But now something I also wanted to talk about, and we briefly mentioned it before with in regards to Matt Murray. You know, it's been a massive issue over the past few years, and that's the defense corps. How do you think they can even fix the issues they've had with either with the personnel they have, or do you think they just need a massive overhaul there?
Well, it's so difficult. I mean, like I look at Jake Sanderson and I think that Jake Sanderson is going to be an exceptional player. Like I think that he's going to really, really improve and bolster this D-core immediately as soon as he comes in, but it's not enough to completely change it. They can't just always have him and Shabbat on the ice. Like that's not a realistic solution. So, and the other side of that as well is that you look at teams that do well and their depth on D is incredible. Like you look at St. Louis when they won the cup, you look at Tampa through these past runs, like Boston's always in it. And like these teams that go far in the playoffs, like that's what you need. And that's kind of been what Toronto's kryptonite had been for years and years. So I think that Jake Sanderson is going to help, but they need a lot there and they need a lot of tools. And I look at the prospects that are coming up and I think that there's some really exciting pieces. Like I think like Lassie Thompson is kind of proving that he can be really solid. I mean, Zub, we struck gold with Zub. Like I know like we definitely thought that he was going to be an NHLer, but like no one knew he was going to be as good as he is. And he's been exceptional. And I think that he's a key piece, but so I guess it kind of to answer your question, the way I look at it is I think that there's pieces in the prospect pipeline that could come in and play a valuable role. But what worries me is that I don't think that you can ice a D core that has four players potentially that are under the age of 23. I don't think that you can do that and have that work because, I mean, historically, it just doesn't really work. I don't know many teams that have been able to do that and do that successfully. You need some veterans back there. So I think that with Jake Sanderson coming in and another kind of like acquisition of a top, like a true top four guy on the right hand side, maybe that has that size that they want and that they're after. I think that would be a solid start. And I mean, I think unfortunately it's looking like Eric Brännström isn't going to be a part of the organization long term. And to me, like kind of sucks because I know he might not have worked out exactly the way that they want, but like kind of having that mobility and having that on their back end and even like a left side potentially of Shabbat, Sanderson and Brännström, I think would bode well for them. So there's a lot of question marks. There's definitely a lot that needs to be addressed, but I do think that Sanderson will give them a bit of relief in that sense. And then hopefully they can go out and acquire like a proper veteran, get Zaitsev out of there, get Delzato out of there. And really kind of maybe some addition by subtraction.
Oh yeah. A ton of addition by subtraction. Like you said, with Zaitsev, you know, I'm generally a fan of Victor Mete, although he hasn't been great this season. You know, Delzato, not great. He's put up some points, I guess, but Josh Brown, I mean, man, he's had quite a rough go. So yeah, I think if they can actually have Sanderson be like a top player who plays on the second pairing, I think that'll be the first time they actually have like a legitimately really good player on the second pairing since they went to the cup. Probably like really, when was the last time they had three good defensemen that you can say, okay, this guy's really good? Like, you know, they had Carlson and Mathot. Then after that, I mean, I guess I had Gonchar for a point, but maybe he was the last good number three they had. So yeah, like I do have some faith in Thompson and Bernard Docker, and I still have a bit of hope in Brännström. I think maybe in an ideal world, you can have him play on the right side with Sanderson. Potentially that's an option, but I, you know, realistically, I just don't think he's a DJ Smith kind of player, which is kind of what you were alluding to. So yeah, I think they do have potential guys that can fit in that spot. And just what worries me is finding that one other already established player, because I don't know, it seems like they thought a guy like Delzato or Brown or Zaitsev or whoever, it seemed like they thought one or several of those players could have been a good top four option, and they just haven't been really.
No, 100%. And I think that that's kind of another part of this. And you brought it up in like, and DJ Smith isn't a fan of Eric Brandstrom. And I think like he kind of isn't really like, I think it's becoming obvious that he's just not the kind of guy that fits on his team. And especially not on that right-hand side, which we know is Brandstrom's preference. And actually, when Derek and I spoke to Pierre Dorion, that was one thing that he said about Brandstrom not playing on the right side, is that DJ had come to him and said like numerous times that he's been able to point out times where Brandstrom had difficulty defending on his right side. So clearly there is a bit of animosity there, and maybe it's justified. Like, I don't know, like that's between them, but it's one of those things where you do wonder if a new coach came in and if it was Mann, like you said earlier, because you have to figure at this point, he's the front runner, and he's coached a lot of these guys before, like when they were in Belleville, and a lot of these star players. And we know how well that worked for John Cooper when he came up from his HL affiliate. So I guess like you look at that and you wonder, okay, what does that change? If a new coach comes in here and he doesn't have this kind of love or these eyes for Zaitsev and these eyes for Brown, and maybe they give Brandstrom a role where he can succeed because he's getting played in a system where he can succeed. Well, maybe all of a sudden the D isn't so bad because they're able to kind of use the guys that can succeed in a proper system, and they can retool it that way. And I agree. Like, I think that Ottawa historically, like, I mean, like aside from when they had what, like Redden, Chara, like that decor, like with Phillips as well, like, I can't remember a time where we had three legitimate pairings where, like, when they were on the ice, I felt pretty confident that we were going to be all right. So, I think that maybe some of that changes with coaching, but also just getting those quality guys and getting a guy who has NHL experience, but is a good player. Like, just because they have NHL experience doesn't mean necessarily they're a good player, that they're in the room. Like, you need someone who can look good on the ice and that you can trust. And yeah, that probably means you're going to have to pay them, but like, they're worth it.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel like that's where maybe not looking too much into the numbers maybe hurts them in terms of, you know, thinking Nikita Zaitsev is good and things like that. So, and just quickly on the Brandstrom thing, you know, he's been like one of the best defenders in the AHL under Troy Mann. So who knows what he can do, you know, if Mann does become the coach. So that is certainly something interesting to think about. Unless Brandstrom gets traded, you know, before the deadline or something. But now, one of the few reasons to continue watching games the rest of the way is, of course, 19-year-old Tim Stützle. And he's actually been playing center the past few games, probably out of necessity. And he still only has one goal and seven assists in 19 games. But do you think he can actually stick at center long term?
So first of all, I want to give Tim Stützle a lot of credit, because you can tell how hard he's working to stay at center.
Yeah.
Like, I think like watching him, it's very evident that he wants to be a center, because he is chasing the puck back. I know he like made that big defensive play where he laid the body down in his first game, like in the role. And, you know, like I think that honestly, I think that Ottawa lacks a true elite number one center. And I think that with what they have right now and what they're going to be able to acquire, it's not really likely that you're able to go out and get a true number one center unless it was like Jack Eichel. So I think that having him at center would be extremely great for the team. And I think that he does have the potential to stick. I think that it's early. Like, I think the fact that he's playing center right now kind of surprises me a bit. Like, I thought that maybe in like another year or two they might kind of give him the shot, just especially like with all the pressure, and we know he's been snake bitten. Like, he's been generating a lot of chances, but he just hasn't been able to bury, or maybe his line mates just haven't been skilled enough to be able to bury the fees that he gives them. But yeah, I mean, I love it. I think that he's really making it difficult for them to say that he shouldn't be there, because he's doing what is asked of him and kind of what's required from a center. I think that his defensive game has improved immensely this year. So, and with that, kind of also just kind of strengthens his case. So I think that it's possible that he sticks. I could see him definitely kind of bouncing around from center to left wing over the next year, year and a half, especially depending on who they acquire. But I do think down the road, he's going to be a center. And I think that he hopefully can kind of be like that top line legitimate, like, elite center, because the way that he distributes the puck, if he's in the middle of the ice or he's playing in that center position, it's going to make it that much more valuable in that spot.
Yeah, he'd be incredibly valuable if he could play center. All of a sudden you have Stützle on the first line, Josh Norris as an excellent 2C, and then Shane Pinto as your 3C. I mean, you look at a team like Tampa, where, you know, a lot of times these cup winning teams, they don't just have six top six forwards or you know, two top six centers. Usually their third line center, you know, a guy like Yanni Gourde, that guy can easily play in the top six. So, you know, if Shane Pinto has to play in the third line, that's fine. That's a good problem to have. And yeah, I just think he adds a lot of dynamic plays, you know, in both ends of the ice. I forget who tweeted it out the other day, but they're just showing a breakout that Stützle had, and it was like 2 seconds, and you know, it was on Stützle's stick, passes it out of the zone, gets around a guy, gets it back. You know, it just looks so amazing, and you rarely see it. You know, you rarely see them break the puck out of their zone that easily. So I think it's a lot easier to find, you know, top left winger or top right winger, whatever, than it is to find that top center. So yeah, like you were saying, I mean, that's massive if you can do that. I wouldn't worry too much about the faceoffs, which some people have talked about. Like, I don't think he's been taking many faceoffs, but you know, maybe you put someone on his line that can be taking those faceoffs a bit more often. But in terms of the defensive responsibilities and stuff, it seems like he's taking it seriously. It seems like he can do it. You know, perhaps that takes a few seasons to really get his all around game going, but yeah, game changer if he can stick there.
Well, and he, like, the thing about Tim Stützle, and like, even last year, I know, like, there was a lot of defensive lapses, but like, his compete level is as high as any other player on the team. Like, his like ability, well, maybe not Brady Tkachuk, but you know, like, aside from him, like, his ability to like go in and work for pucks and like want the puck, like, his motor is phenomenal. And like, typically that's what you need in a good defensive player. Like it's extremely translatable. So I think that he has all the tools. It's really just a matter of like, yeah, Tim Stützle is still a bit raw. Like, he's definitely still adjusting a little bit to figuring out like exactly what works and what can happen. And also just building chemistry and having guys that can play with him. I really hope when Drake Batherson's back, he gets a look to play with Stützle.
Yes.
Because I think that would really kind of heighten him, like, to have another guy that he can feed off of. As much as like, I really like Nick Paul, and I think he's actually a great fit there because he can take a lot of draws as well. Like, they can kind of swap him out as they see fit. I think that is what I'm excited for. I'm excited to see him play with line mates that can handle what he can do offensively and can set him up and put him in positions to really do what he can do as well. Because I think that, like, that's what he needs is guys that have skill. And then he needs time with those guys to be able to build chemistry, because just getting like a game or two with Batherson, like, here or there, things like that, like, that doesn't work. Like, you can't just always be shuffling around the lines and expect these guys to build chemistry. Like, I mean, yeah, Norris and Brady have extremely great chemistry, but they also played together at the USNDP program for 2 years, building that chemistry. Like, it's things like that teams need. And I just hope that he can kind of find some consistently skilled line mates.
So, yeah, I mean, he has 7 assists so far in the season. I think if you put Stützle on a line on like a contending team, you know, say you want to put him on a line with Ovechkin, obviously unrealistic, but you know, he probably has like a dozen assists at least, just because of, you know, playing with a guy who can actually put the puck in the net. Yeah, so I think if you put him with Batherson, I think, you know, his point totals would finally go up. I think he's definitely due to get a lot more. I mean, there's no way he's 8 points in 19 games. Like, there's no way that's his level and where he should be at. So I'm still excited for him. And one more thing I wanted to finish off the show with is talking about some more positive things here. And obviously a lot of people are pretty apathetic right now, myself included. So it's kind of hard to be motivated to watch the games, but what are some reasons why we should continue watching the Senators team?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think that kind of the last topic that we had is yeah. the largest reason. And that's honestly what's been pulling me is that game against San Jose. I was so excited to watch because I wanted to see Tim Stützle play center. I wanted to see like what he can do. And I think that that's really kind of what it comes down to. And like, that's how you find that motivation. It's remembering kind of who these kids are and really kind of giving that opportunity to watch it and be excited about it. And it, honestly, I know I keep going back to it. It shouldn't be the only reason, but Tim Stützle is electrifying. And like, I've been fortunate to go to a couple Suns games this year. It's been a while since I've been able to go, even before COVID. And that was one thing I noticed like at games was that like watching Tim Stützle reminded me so much of watching Erik Karlsson because whenever he was on the ice, I would get excited and he would do something exciting to see. And like to have a guy like that and also like a Drake Batherson, because Drake Batherson kind of has that electric ability as well. I think that like for me, like that's the big thing. And hopefully, I guess we'll see how North Dakota season goes. But Jake Sanderson, I mean, he could have anywhere from what, like 8 to 20 games yeah. with Ottawa, depending on when the season ends. So that's going to be another reason at the end of the year, too. So I would say just keep being excited about the prospects. The future is bright. And I know that we might be wanting the future to be bright today. And we might have thought that we were going to have a way brighter now. But I mean, a lot of these kids are still extremely gifted and they're developing and they just continue to get better. And that's what's so exciting about this, is that this team, there are a lot of these individual players are good, but they continue to just make strides and get better. So I would say like, pick your favorite prospect or young guy that you're going to root for and just watch him and have him be the reason, whether it be whenever Igor gets called up again or whatever it is.
For sure. Yeah. And there's lots to look forward to. And what's great is that, you know, when you see a power play with like Shabbat, Stützle, Norris, Batherson, Tkachuk, like, man, some of those power plays they have and the movement they have is just incredible to watch. So they have obviously these really good, exciting players, you know, Gustafsson, you know, probably taking the reins over as the number one guy. You know, Batherson's been like a point of game player. You know, Lassie Thompson has looked good. So that's the frustrating thing almost, is that there are these good things to watch. And then you're like, how did they lose again? But so, yeah, like certainly still some things to, you know, be excited about, look out for. Certainly not all doom and gloom, even though, like I said, they're on pace for 39 points. But yeah, it's a long season. And who knows, maybe, I mean, last season they went on a 41 game stretch where I think in that 41 game stretch, they were averaging like, or they were on pace for 90 points or something like that. So who knows? But yeah, any other reasons for optimism or tuning in, I guess, the rest of the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that at least for the last couple games, again, like the games are close. And that's kind of been the another thing that I know is like extremely frustrating. And I don't know, I guess like you're on the West Coast, so maybe watching this string of games was maybe even easier for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's probably a nice refresh. But that's kind of been like a big thing, was like that San Jose game. Like, I mean, stayed up here in Ontario and watched it, and to lose it the way that we lost it, and like with that little bit of time left and not get like any points from it, like it's frustrating. And that's happened multiple times this year, like that Rangers game, which is where it kind of seemed
point,
like the season flipped when Stützle got that diving call. Like it's kind of one of those things where it's hard, but it's a major pro that at least we're in these games and at least the games are close. And I mean, yeah, like there are the odd time that we're getting blown out, but we're not getting blown out every night. And I think that on a lot of nights, at least for a chunk of time, the team is playing a lot better than our record shows. And that's another reason, like, to definitely tune in, is just the fact that these games are competitive, and at least like you can watch good hockey. Unfortunately, yeah, like they have been losing, but I do think that there's a couple games where we could have gotten it if the right guys were on the ice at the time, yeah, or whatever it may be. But
absolutely, yeah, it's you know, a win's gonna come at some point, and you know, at least that win against Pittsburgh, God, what was it, 2 weeks ago now? I mean, that one was fun, but yeah, hopefully there'll be more of those. And I think we can finish it up there. But before we go, is there anything you want to plug for the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot aside from the Future Sickos podcast. So if you want to, if my voice doesn't annoy you too much, definitely be sure to listen to Derek Lee and I. We're definitely trying to up a bit of our like prospect coverage, specifically pertaining to the draft, and that's not just based on the standings. It was something we were kind of always planning on doing, but at least now maybe we can get a little more excited talking about this draft class, because this draft class is looking phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's super exciting, kind of that first, like, anywhere from 1 to 12 looks a lot like it did a couple years ago in the Stutzel and Sanderson draft. So there's a lot of players to cover and a lot of players to get excited about. So that would be the only thing I would say, is that if people are looking to kind of scratch that itch, definitely tune in, because we've got some things coming in that regard.
Absolutely. Can't recommend that enough. Definitely check that out. And Brennan, thanks again for coming on.
No, thanks so much for having me. It was great sitting down with you, Trevor.
Thanks a lot. As I wrap it up, reminder that you can find the Cost Per Point cast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. And if you really enjoy it, you can rate and review the podcast on those platforms as well. You can follow me on Twitter at ShaqTS, read my articles at Silver 7 Sens, and also follow my YouTube channel called The Hockey Shaq. If you want to submit a listener question for an upcoming episode, send me a message at CPPointcast on Twitter, where you'll get any updates about the show. Stay strong, and thanks for listening. Adios.